today on Annenberg Radio News.
If you go back to colonial and revolutionary times, you get civil activism. If it weren't for civil activism, we wouldn't have had a revolution.
We look at activism from large to small, old to new. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for November 3, 2011. I'm Regina Graham. It was the nurses' turn to occupy L.A. today. About 100 nurses marched through downtown Los Angeles. They called for a tax on financial transactions on Wall Street, claiming it could raise as much as $350 billion for the federal budget. Around the world, the Occupy movement has taken different tones. L.A.'s movement has been orderly and fairly quiet, while Oakland, California, has seen several violent clashes between protesters and police. Melissa Runnels visited Occupy L.A. today to get reaction to what's happening in Oakland.
The Camp Inn at L.A. City Hall is moving into its second month of action, and Occupy L.A. is watching carefully what's going on in Oakland. Last night was another round of violence as protesters shut down the port of Oakland. Riot police in Oakland used tear gas and other weapons against the protesters and arrested 80 people. Today, many of the Occupy Oakland supporters are criticizing demonstrators who provoked the violence. Here in L.A., there have been no signs of the same kind of tension. All was quiet today except for helicopters hovering overhead.
Oakland has a real right to be upset about the city, about how they behaved. Whatever happened was escalated by the police.
This protester didn't want to use his name, but organizer Magda Rod did.
I haven't really looked at their website. I've been watching their Twitter and their Facebook. I was watching the live stream until 3 in the morning last night, watching what was happening there. So, I mean, it's like watching a war in action.
The memory of the police shooting of Oscar Grant at an Oakland subway station almost 2 years ago hovers over the Oakland events. Ironically, here in L.A., the Rodney King riots have influenced the police response in a completely different way.
So it's a beautiful thing. As far as I'm concerned, it's a love fest with the LAPD for the time being, and we're grateful for that.
Mayor Villaraigosa has ordered the police to leave the protesters alone. And L.A. protesters remain hopeful that Oakland-style confrontations won't be necessary here. From L.A. City Hall, Melissa Runnels for Annenberg Radio News.
Good. Student loan debts are at their highest level yet. Last year, the average college student who took out loans graduated with more than $25,000 in debt. Matt Reed is the program director of the Institute for College Access and Success. He says tuition is increasing faster than students' ability to pay.
Overall, college is still a great investment. College graduates earn more than those without a college degree and have lower unemployment, but for students who graduate with substantial debt, it can impact choices about going to graduate school, when to start a family, buying a home, other things like that.
President Obama has proposed a pay-as-you-go plan that would cap federal loan repayments. Maddie Lindsay asked USC students how debt has affected them and what they thought of the president's plan.
I'm personally getting loans myself, and I know depending on what time you pick up the loans, the interest rate can get ridiculous. It's a private loan, so you can't really kind of control that. I mean, it's up to the bank, it's up to the private sectors. I mean, it's a tough call. The financial aspect, I feel, is definitely one of the more sad aspects when it comes to deciding your college choice. You look at the qualities of the institution, and sometimes you just can't go, even though you'd really like the school, because you can't financially afford it.
It's terrifying for a lot of my friends who I know are taking a lot of the financial burden. In terms of going back to grad school, I mean, that's horrifying because I'll be on my own for that one.
What President Obama is doing is definitely kind of giving students, giving college grads a little sense of peace. Like, you know, you may not necessarily get a job right away, but, you know, don't worry about your student loans, like worry about getting a job first. So.
Education's one of those things that the government is always going to think that they're just magically going to fix with some bill. I don't have a whole lot of faith in it. We're going to spend more of our money, hopefully helping some people. Who knows how far reaching it will be. I mean, this country's got a lot of problems. It's not just education. So we'll see, but I'm not necessarily optimistic.
That was Maddie Lindsay talking to Andrew Troy and Caitlin Finnegan. Next year marks the 20th anniversary of the 1992 Los Angeles riots. The riots led to more than 50 deaths, as well as a lasting rift between the Black and Korean communities. Now, Ariel Edwards-Levy reports, some groups are trying to redefine the day's legacy.
Haepin Im remembers visiting Koreatown during the L.A. riots.
I was just amazed how quickly chaos could happen overnight and how unsafe you could feel. I had never heard of a Black Korean conflict until watching the news about the L.A. riot, and it was just very strange, surreal, like being placed in something that I really didn't understand.
Nearly 20 years later, she says, misunderstandings and anger remain.
There is an open wound that needs to be dealt with around the Los Angeles riots. And I believe there's a lot of different narratives that are being told. And each narrative has its own validity.
Im's group, Korean Churches for Community Development, is trying to merge those narratives. Along with church and city leaders, the group announced today its plans to commemorate the riots in April with a day of service and a peace march downtown. They're calling the event Sa-I-Gu, Korean for 429, the first day of rioting. Im says they hope to reclaim it as a day for dialogue across cultures. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
Forget Wall Street. Congresswoman Janice Hahn is calling on sports fans to occupy Major League Baseball. Julia Dang reports.
Congresswoman Janice Hahn is introducing the Give Fans a Chance Act today. The bill would allow the public to buy major league sports teams. She says any state, county, or local government organization would be able to make offers. Hahn feels sports fans nationwide are upset with the corporate greed they see in pro team ownership. She cited Frank and Jamie McCourt's use of Dodgers funds as a prime example. The bill is being co-sponsored by Hahn and Oregon Representative Earl Blumenauer. Together, they are trying to amend old antitrust laws that banned public ownership of teams. It won't pass in time for you to buy part of the Dodgers, but fans could soon get a chance to make a bid when major league teams are sold. Julia Dang, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight, the weather will be cool and cloudy with a low of 51. Tomorrow, expect showers throughout the day and temperatures in the 40s and 50s. We'll get some sunshine on Saturday before more possible rain. And don't forget, Sunday's the day to turn your clocks back for the end of daylight savings time. Later on Annenberg Radio News, is California too big? A look at the movement behind the movement to split the state in two. The Occupy Wall Street movement has been occupying the minds of city officials throughout the country. Many are wondering how long the protesters can camp out in their city centers. Here in L.A., Mayor Villaraigosa has said protesters on the lawn of City Hall cannot remain indefinitely. Freedom of speech is protected by the Bill of Rights, but do the protesters have the right to remain in a public space? Sarah Golden talked to Michael Shapiro, a law professor at USC.
Michael Shapiro teaches constitutional law at USC. He's been following the Occupy LA movement, and he says, though there's a lot of buzz, the tradition of civil activism is deeply ingrained in our history.
If you go back to colonial and revolutionary times, that's what you get. You get civil activism. If it weren't for civil activism, we wouldn't have had a revolution. Whatever you think about Occupy LA, it's relatively tame compared to many of the demonstrations and protest movements we've had before.
Now is the time, Shapiro says, when we'll find out the type of movement Occupy will become.
This is at a point now where it could get very messy. It could get violent. It could turn into a riot. It could turn into Oakland.
Law enforcement walks a delicate line in this process. They must allow protesters to express themselves, but they also need to preserve peace.
This is a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing. If the police intervene, that gets people riled up, and so it, you know, escalates the risk of violence or spreads the protest. See what the police are doing to us. If the police do absolutely nothing, it's by design. It's not like they haven't heard about this. It's very difficult to say which course is going to cause an unfortunate escalation or an appropriate de-escalation.
Shapiro says that in order to understand the police's position, you need to know the First Amendment. Basically, the city can't stop the protests because of the content of their message, but they can regulate where, when, and how they protest.
that will affect speech, but it's not directed at speech, and it will be tested on a constitutional standard of minimum rationality. You know, if it just barely makes sense, it's good enough.
Last week, Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa said that the Occupy LAers cannot stay on the lawn of City Hall indefinitely, citing damages to the grounds and sanitation issues. Shapiro doesn't think that this is censorship.
I don't think the mayor cares what their viewpoint is. As a matter of fact, I don't think the mayor knows what their viewpoint is. They could be told to go. There is nothing intrinsically violative of the First Amendment.
The movement's next move could crystallize its future. It will decide if they peter out or stay at the risk of confrontation with authorities. Sarah Golden, Annenberg News.
Today, I spoke with author and columnist Joe Matthews, who shared what he thinks some of the biggest problems as a state California is facing.
The biggest problem is our tendency to think that there's one problem or two problems that we can address, that, you know, there's one fix that gets us there. In fact, we've essentially reformed ourselves by approaching things one at a time, one ballot measure initiative at a time. That's been our approach. We've essentially reformed ourselves into this fix, and we need to stop doing that and have a moment of design where we try to make all the pieces of our system fit together. So what we need to do is stop trying to fix it, stop going to the ballot, and come together in some process, whether it's a constitutional convention or a revision commission, or the legislature could do it itself, and like design a coherent system.
And in saying that it's broken, there have been hundreds of proposals where people would like to split California up as a state. Why does that keep coming up?
Because of our size. I mean, we're not really the size of an American state. We're the size of a country. If California was a country, it would be one of the world's largest countries. It would be the 35th largest country in the world, in a world with, you know, some 200 countries. Every country that's bigger than us, the 34, have some sort of regional government. You know, they have states, they have provinces, they have prefectures, they have what have you. And we don't have that, even though we're country size. And it's particularly problematic because our real units of citizenship are our regions. When I go around, you know, outside the state, I don't usually say I'm from California. I usually say I'm from L.A. You know, we're really citizens of regions. Our commutes are regional. Our media are regional. You know, we move around a lot within our regions. You know, sports team loyalties, those are all regional. Weather, they seem to define us and define our lives, and yet we have no unit of government there. We have a very distant government, which shows a lot of power. We've centralized a lot of power, you know, kind of haphazardly through initiatives and constitutional amendments in Sacramento. And then we have a lot of thousands and thousands of local governments that are very weak, and, you know, there are too many of us to track and keep them accountable. And we don't have that middle area, which is where we really live and where problems get solved, which is at the regional level. And so, you know, regions invariably feel put upon, that they're not represented, there's nothing there. One of the ways that gets expressed is by people saying, hey, our region's not doing very well, we're not represented, we're not getting what we want, so let's split off.
Would this solve one of the problems the state, you know, one of the many problems the state has been facing, do you think?
You know, I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, you know, splitting a state, it's happened a few times in American history. The best I think we can do is try to think of ourselves more as what we are. We're really more like a country. Do two things. Devolve power from Sacramento into the regions so the regions have real power. Build regional governments. Really replace state government with regional government. And on the bottom of that means consolidating and save money by, you know, consolidating cities and local government, so into things that are more manageable and not so weak and scattered. If you had that, I think you'd have a better basis, you know, for government.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That was author and columnist Joe Matthews. Drug reform activists from around the world gather in L.A. today to discuss an end to the war on drugs. Aaron Schrank reports on how that war is viewed today.
No big production number. Just say,
no.
You'd be surprised how well it works.
No!
We've all heard ads like that one, all part of the large-scale ad campaign in the U.S. war on drugs. 40 years after the push against drugs began, polls show the majority of the country believes drug policies are failing. The 1,000 people who gathered at the International Drug Policy Reform Conference certainly feel that way. They're calling for an end to these anti-drug policies. Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom delivered the welcoming remarks at day one of the three-day event, telling the crowd that California is the right venue for drug reform.
Of dreamers, of doers, of entrepreneurs, of innovators, a state that has certainly been on the front lines in reconciling the abject failure that has been 40 years, this failed war on drugs.
Newsom pointed to swollen prison populations in the state and nationwide and the associated costs as proof of the failures of current drug policy. In 1980, there were 500,000 people incarcerated in U.S. prisons. Today, that number is 2.3 million. Half a million are in prison for a drug-related offense, compared to 40,000 just a few decades ago. Prisons are overcrowded and underfunded. On the other side of the aisle, GOP presidential candidate Gary Johnson showed support for the drug reform movement.
The best thing that government can do for you and I is to empower you and I as individuals to make decisions that only you and I should make. And that's the bedroom, and that's what we put in our own bodies. And that goes on and on and on. Freedom and liberty.
One of the timely issues the conference aims to tackle is marijuana legalization. A Gallup poll last week showed that a record-high 50% of Americans now favor marijuana legalization. Conference organizers called the results a sign that the drug reform movement is picking up speed. Gavin Newsom told the crowd that one of the biggest problems with drug reform is that politicians are scared to speak out.
And my gosh, if I could just tape record the private conversations, it would break your heart. It wouldn't just upset you. It would break your heart. Because we know better. We're just not doing better.
Tonight, the Reform Conference will host a mass public protest in MacArthur Park with speakers and live music. They'll call for an end to the war on drugs and celebrate the reform movement. Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
From Occupy Wall Street to the Arab Spring, protests can have major impacts. But not all rebellions are grand gestures. Sometimes they're just a part of everyday life. Petty, sure, but triumphs all the same. You can hear tales of these small acts of rebellion on the next episode of Detours, a storytelling podcast from Annenberg Radio News. Here's one from reporter Caitlin Parker.
So this was probably my sophomore year of high school in McKinney, Texas. I wasn't so much into the community, but my parents really were. They were pretty active in local politics and the school board and charities. But a couple times a year, my parents would throw various events. And so this was one, I remember it was on for Mardi Gras on Fat Tuesday, and they had set up a really nice catered buffet for these parties. My younger brother and I were sort of expected to be present and look nice and be polite, but, you know, sort of be on the sidelines. I was wearing some party dress with purple and green accessories and sort of got the okay from my parents and went upstairs and sort of waited for this party to start. And sometime in this waiting period, I decided that I didn't want to be wearing this stupid dress and making nice conversation with adults that I didn't really know or care about. So I changed into a pair of holy jeans and I think a flannel, you know, button-up shirt. So I wait until the party is really swinging with lots of people and, you know, come downstairs in this raggedy outfit. I go into our pantry. I remember having to tap the mayor on the shoulder to ask him to move out from in front of the pantry and grab a couple of brown paper sacks that I use to pack my lunch in. And then just start going through this buffet line, just dumping food sort of indiscriminately into these brown paper bags. I think I filled up a couple of these sacks and, you know, they're leaking and about to burst open, but taking them upstairs and having a nice moment with my brother. And that was my small act of rebellion.
To hear more of Caitlin's story, check out Detours. Now we check in with Rhiannon Chutanich on what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Rhiannon?
Today at the Conrad Murray trial was the last chance for the prosecution and defense to tell their statements to the jury. And over 80 protesters were arrested at Occupy Oakland this morning. And the stars of Twilight left their mark at Grauman's Chinese Theater. You can watch ATVN at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision or catch us on the web at atvn.org.
Thanks. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Maddie Lindsay and Yvette Sanchez. And thank you for listening to Annenberg Radio News. I'm Regina Graham.